Judge Tinder and I are pleased to be joined this morning by the newest member of our court, former Chief Judge of the District Court in the Southern District of Indiana, Judge David Hamilton. David, we're excited that you're here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
It's ready for the first case of the morning, which is appeal number 09-1203, United States versus Derek Dixon. We have Mr. Anderson.
Yes, may it please the court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Derek Dixon. On this case, Mr. Dixon pled guilty to two individual sales of crack cocaine, 4.5 grams at one point and 4.9 grams for the other sale. However, at sentencing, he was also held responsible for several deliveries he made on behalf of Mervyn Butler. The individual sales were to a man named Craig Brantley. The court found that those were relevant conduct. However, the court in this case was wrong because there wasn't sufficient showing of either temporal proximity or similarity between those acts that were clearly in furtherance of the conspiracy and the sales to Mr. Brantley. First off, the sales to Mr. Brantley and the deliveries on behalf of Mr. Butler could have been over a year apart. The record doesn't show. All we know is that when these other people...
Bright line, it could be more than a year and still be relevant conduct.
It could be, yes, although courts have found temporal proximity to be either absent or extremely weak when there's been as little as 5 to 8 months in between acts. And second, perhaps more important, Mr. Dixon's sales to Mr. Brantley weren't similar. For one thing, he sold anywhere between 3.5 and 4.9 grams. There were other sales to Mr. Brantley that were not contesting, those are properly considered relevant conduct. To Mr.
Brantley, 24 grams of those, if you add all those up.
24 and a half, yes, total at least.
So all they have to do is find another 26 plus grams, and then they're in that 50 to 150 range, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And how big is Mount Vernon?
I have to give an educated guess because I did not look it up. I'd say probably 10,000, maybe, maybe 15.
Small place.
I don't know.
Southern Illinois, and it looks like this whole crew was the were the crack cocaine distributors in that little neck of the woods down there.
Well, sad to say, they probably weren't the only ones these days, but...
And Judge Gilbert had presided over trials or sentencings involving a number of people out of that area, out of this same operation.
That's true. Of course, most of that isn't exactly in the record, but, you know, as I was saying, the other point is the sales to Mr. Brantley were much smaller than any deliveries he ever made for Mr. Butler, with either 14.17 or 28.35 grams at a time. The government argues that there's no proof that Mr. Dixon was acting alone when he sold to Mr. Brantley or that he had some other source of crack. That's true, but it's also true that there's no proof that he wasn't, and the government bears the burden of proof in that regard.
Well, we know that when the search was carried out at Mr. Dixon's home, they found certainly plenty of paraphernalia connected with trafficking and crack cocaine. And if I recall correctly, was it Mr. Butler's fingerprint or thumbprint that was on the cooking pot for the crack in Dixon's own home?
Yes. And not contesting that there was sufficient evidence to find that Mr. Dixon was part of a conspiracy with Mr. Butler, just that that was not relevant conduct. That was separate from the sales from Mr. Brantley is the sole argument we're making today. There was, clearly sufficient evidence to find that he was part of the conspiracy, at least by, sentencing standards of a preponderance. But the fact that he apparently acted alone later, makes the sentences different. Therefore, the court should have only based Mr. Dixon's sentence on the sales to Mr. Brantley of approximately 24 and a half grams, which would have reduced his guidelines range to 46 to 57 months instead of 70 to 87. But and even assuming that the evidence was barely sufficient to make the connection. The court didn't adequately explain its findings so that this court could review it. The court simply stated that the time frames were close enough, but didn't explain whether, that was all that mattered to the court or whether it thought there was something else that overcame the weakness of the temporal proximity. And simply stating conclusion doesn't permit adequate review by this court, especially when the probation officer did the same thing. Therefore, even if the evidence was barely sufficient, this court should remand to the district court in order for it to make findings which would permit this court to adequately review it.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Norwood.
Your Honors, may it please the court, I'm George Norwood. I'm an AUSA from Southern Illinois. Mount Vernon is approximately 14,000 to 15,000 people. This isn't in the record, but I've been prosecuting cases since 2001 out of Mount Vernon, and we've had over 100 crack defendants from Mount Vernon in that time frame. It's Interstate 57 runs north-south through it. Interstate 64 runs east-west, so we get major cities feeding into Mount Vernon thinking they can make more money in Mount Vernon than a big city.
More than 100 defendants in Mount Vernon?
Just crack defendants.
Just crack?
Wow. Yeah, since 2001.
Methamphetamine cases out of there as well?
Pardon?
Do you have methamphetamine cases?
We have methamphetamine, gun cases, all out of Mount Vernon. What it is, like I say, I prosecuted defendants from St. Louis coming east, Indianapolis coming west, Chicago coming south, and Memphis coming north, because it's at the hub of the two Interstate 57 and 64.
Well, no, those people are coming from Evansville, not Indianapolis.
I lived in Indianapolis. They came from Indianapolis. but the bottom line is we have to show that there's a common accomplice, a common purpose, a similar modus operandi. All these transactions took place in the same town. They took place at the behest of Mervyn Butler. They were in the similar time frame as which the conspiracy was charged. There's a common scheme.
I think it's sort of odd here, though, that you take a guilty plea on the substantive counts and dismiss the conspiracy. Usually it's the other way around.
Well, there are two reasons, Your Honor. One, I believe, and Your Honor will tell me if I was mistaken in that or not, but that the relevant conduct would be such that it wouldn't matter if you pled to the conspiracy or the substantive counts.
That's true.
Second, in my 11 years of prosecuting, Mervyn Butler is the only defendant who received an outright acquittal. So this defendant was not willing to plead to the conspiracy, and this was before this case came to a plea. So he wasn't willing to plead to the conspiracy. All the others involved in the conspiracy were other people that have been convicted of conspiring with Mervyn Butler. For some reason, the jury, in its wisdom, did not find so with Mr. Butler. So I think that was a sort of a stick in the defendant's head. How can I be guilty of a conspiracy with someone who's been acquitted of one? Not understanding the principles of law. And his attorney thought this was the best way to resolve the matter in the defendant's benefit, and the government believed it was an appropriate resolution. But throughout this time, there's no cessation. There's no evidence of any cessation in Dixon's drug dealing. There's no interruption in it. It's simply a continuous activity in a small little town selling the same drugs for the same person. And that's why the government believes the relevant conduct is appropriate in this case. With respect to the sufficient findings, they were all based on the pre-sentence report. There was no dispute as to the pre-sentence report and the facts therein. If this court, I believe there's case authority, if this court does not believe that Judge Gilbert made sufficient findings, the government believes he did. But if this court doesn't, it can make its own independent findings because it's sort of like Judge Gilbert was basing it on the pleadings or the statements in the PSR, and this court can look at the PSR just as Judge Gilbert did and make its own determination. Is there any further questions?
Believe not.
Thank you,
Mr. Norwood. Anything further, Mr. Anderson?
I would simply like to point out that it appears from the record that Dixon wasn't selling for Mr. Butler. Well, with the deliveries that we know about, he was simply making deliveries on his behalf. Whether he's getting something out of it or doing a favor, we don't know. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.